Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning for WorkinSports.com, and this is a special edition of the Work in Sports podcast. We're in a very unique situation right now with the coronavirus outbreak changing the landscape of the sports industry minute by minute. Multiple sports leagues and longstanding events are being suspended, if not outright canceled, in an effort to isolate and calm the spread of this deadly outbreak. Star players we know and root for, Hollywood actors, heads of state, are coming out as infected by this virus responsible for the COVID-19 disease. I want to be clear, we are not panicked. We are looking to the future. These cancellations and suspensions will have an impact on the business of sports, and it's time to discuss and prepare for the ramifications. Joining me today to discuss the short and long-term effects of the coronavirus outbreak is Professor Kenneth Shropshire. Mr. Shropshire is the CEO of the Global Sports Institute at Arizona State and has held consultative roles with the NCAA, Major League Baseball, NFL, NFLPA, and United States Olympic Committee. Dr. Shropshire, thanks for joining me.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So this conversation can really break into different categories. We aren't doctors, so we won't speculate on the virus itself, but we can discuss what this means for the now and what this means for the future. So let's start with the now. In your view, is the decision to suspend the seasons of the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, March Madness, and other major events like the Masters and the EPL, is this an example of discretion being the better part of valor? Do you believe this is the right move?
Yes, I think what we ended up with is, to some extent, there may have been an initial balance of economics versus level of health crisis. And then I think it pretty clearly with the NBA kind of once again leading the way in this space became a question of life or death, and dropping the economics and how do we make sure we are both as safe as possible for the fans and the threat spread throughout society. But I think the NBA, brought to the fore that, the athletes too are in danger. So this whole idea of playing before empty venues and that sort of thing, that was not the right answer either, that the complete shutdown seems to be the path to, as we all know now, to flatten the curve. I think that's what we're all seeking to do.
Yeah, we have heard that term a lot over the last few days. So when leagues do the prudent thing and suspend play, there's an affected class of daily workers. Do you believe the leagues and ownership bear any responsibility to these workers who depend on these roles for their survival?
I think there's a moral responsibility and a moral opportunity. The reports of the Kevin Love donation of $100,000, it's just reflecting on how far that could go. Pay scale of those people impacted, and if a few players, a few executives, certainly a few owners stepped up and thought about numbers in that regard, it could have a huge impact on what really could be a crushing blow to the income of these people that work in these jobs that are dependent upon jobs associated with sporting events, from people that are parking vehicles, doing security, working in concession stands. Now, those are largely hourly workers, and many who have other jobs as well, but this is income that they counted on. So if there's a way to address that, it's becoming more elevated than it had been in terms of the scope of discussion, but it is something that we really should take into account.
Yeah, I've read many people in my LinkedIn feed today who are mentioning that they're an intern or they're a game day worker or they're a seasonal employee, and those their roles have already changed because there's less or no work for them to do. In the short term, outside of the game day staff we just discussed, do you think this will lead to further reaching layoffs across sports? I mean, there's a direct impact to the revenue model, so will there be layoffs?
Yeah, and this, you said at the beginning we're not doctors. I mean, we're also not sports forensic accountants. I think the other side of the equation is how much money is being saved by not playing, and how does that balance out? I mean, I think in the end, it's certainly is a deficit overall, but probably not as severe as we initially contemplate about dollars not coming in from ticket sales and concessions and that sort of thing. In whatever settings there are media rights deals where there's not some insurance that steps in and makes payments, that's an issue too. So it is a long-term impact for sure, but probably not as severe as we anticipate initially. but still a big number.
I also wonder about the major leagues. We know with their long-term deals and media rights deals, a lot of that, they're going to end up out of this fine. But what about those smaller leagues that have the razor-thin margins for success? I mean, the XFL, the Professional Lacrosse League, lower division soccer leagues, or we can go on and on with this.
I think you're right. And I think the one you named initially is the one to watch most closely, the XFL. That here was a startup league that was, you know, on the upswing. I think they were having a pretty positive launch, and this interferes with that launch. And certainly in all the contemplation they had, I'm sure pandemic was not on the list of possibilities. They did probably look at early shutdown and what that would mean, or stoppage and work stoppage in some sort of way. So there's probably some contemplation there. And again, there is probably some degree of cost savings, but you know, their lease deals and all those sorts of things probably did not contemplate a whole lot of this. So there's going to be, you're exactly right. The leagues with the tight margins, the leagues where a profitability like the XFL, I assume, was in the future as opposed to now. That's where the real problems will occur. I think the other space, and I was just thinking about it this morning, with the NCAA is in the revenues that were coming in for the tournament. Again, we don't know what the actual impact on that number is going to be overall. But you know, forget about basketball itself. Think about the percentage that was going to each of these conferences, and think about how the individual schools tended to use those funds to support the non-revenue sports, as they're called. What's the impact going to be there if you do have to make cuts because there's a lack of income? What decisions do you make? And then compliance with Title IX. So there's a whole lot on the horizon, both at the professional level and the collegiate level, that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, I find that interesting. I was looking at that this morning as well. The NCAA tournament brings over $900 million in revenue to the NCAA. And if you take that $900 million of revenue out of the pocket of the athletics, like you said, this is going to affect a lot of different groups. And as we talk about football, basketball, they'll be able to rebound, but those smaller, like you said, non-revenue generating sports could really be impacted.
Yeah, and again, it's you know, this is in the midst of this conversation where we're talking about compensating, you know, college athletes and all those sorts of things. Well, here's a big removal of some of that revenue. So it is a moment where college sports gets to rethink, you know, what are we doing and what do we really want to fund and how do we want to do this and what's important. So we'll see what comes out of it.
Yeah. I also wonder about the mental health of the athletes themselves, especially the college athletes. I mean, these men and women have been competing for championships, you know, one day, and then the next it's just over. A lot of their careers ended abruptly. A lot of spring leagues are saying, we're just going to cancel the season outright, a lot of the spring season sports. How damaging do you think this can be to them, who are spending so much of their time and identity listed, bundled up in their athletic prowess, and now it's just taken away?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, if we think of the, you know, if we step back and think about the people that are thought about least, that are most impacted by this, we, you know, you rightly mentioned the workers at these facilities, but think about the, you know, the college player that was about to enter, you know, at the highest levels, first time to get into the NCAA tournament. But think about also, my son played tennis at Northwestern. Their team was, he's 2 years out, but he's watching the team, and their team was doing extraordinarily well this year. And now tennis is over, so they don't get to see where they were going to go, what they were going to do. The idea that, we talk a lot and think about this whole athlete identity problem, really, how a lot of these kids, this is who they are. But that's not right. That's not who they should be. But as you mentioned, for mental health purposes, there has to be an awareness that if this is removed from a young person, as well as adults, I mean, you know, guys in the NBA not playing too, there's some degree of this problem. You know, the idea of who am I, and the idea that I'm just a student. And the plus is, I'm sure, you know, all these teams are finding ways to practice and sort of do all these things where they keep that identity intact, rightly or wrongly. But there is a great hit that's taking place at the mental level to these kids.
Looking forward, eventually teams and leagues are going to get back to play. We'll eventually get back to that place. Do you think they'll have to make an effort to make up all the lost revenue, or will it go the other way, where they'll have to incentivize people to come back to the events and to show up? Will they have to, you know, do special deals in order to incentivize people to come back to the arena? Or what do you think their approach will be once we get back to play?
No, great question. So I guess we... You know, think about LA when we think about that kind of removal of sport, then sport comes back in terms of the NFL, where there was, you know, there was none for so long, and you have two different outcomes. You have some of the Rams who have had great success, and the Chargers where it took a little time for people to come back. So I think what we have seen is it's a little bit of a toss up as to how it will work and what you need to do. And maybe looking at those two franchises as they started back up in LA will give some kind of insight. But I think, you know, the absence of sport, people will be hungry. People will want to come back, and there will be some high level of excitement. That's my initial thought. But, you know, but LA again is a model to take a look at.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of the LA model. That's a really good point. When do you usually see the broader economic impact? We obviously, the stock market, we've seen affected immediately. Like we're seeing it happen minute by minute. But what about things like employment moving forward? Do you think there'll be the decrease in revenue will start to affect jobs and opportunities for people in the sports industry moving forward?
Short term, for sure. You know, that whatever jobs weren't filled, whatever jobs were open, there's going to be some thought of keeping those jobs unfilled and open for a while. There's going to be some thinking about whether or not everybody should be brought back. I'm sure there's conversations about people being laid off and that sort of thing. I mean, that's where, you know, frankly, all these governmental actions and supplements could be of assistance, could influence these leagues and other entities as businesses to think in favor of the worker as opposed to let's do what's best economically for the business in the short term. So yeah, it's going to be all over the place, I think, in terms of how people are impacted. And a lot of it will have to do with how important is the job that someone is in and how important is it if in fact operations begin in the off season kind of mode, which will be the case for some of these, won't be playing going on necessarily. Will everybody be brought back, or will there be some delay in bringing people back? It's uncertain.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how this will play out. You were talking about how you look back historically to LA as a good example to kind of see the precedent that was set as sports changed there. I was also thinking about after 9/11, there was a massive change in the way we handled security at arenas. There was just a completely different process that we started to go through of pre-9/11 versus post-9/11. Do you think this will have the same sort of an impact moving forward? Do you think things will operate differently at arenas and stadiums after the coronavirus outbreak?
I think so. You know, it is, you know, I'm trying to think back to when the hand sanitizers and the like began to appear. And it certainly has been, you know, for a while there's been a presence, but I think we're going to see a much greater presence of that kind of, you know, aid for fans, that kind of amenity, if you will, in facilities, and that kind of encouragement of using these things, you know, something beyond the, you know, the guy at Yankee Stadium kind of just wiping your seat down looking for a tip. So it's something, you know, it's probably something, yeah, we should be doing anyway. And again, I mean, you know, we'll highlight this five times today. You and I aren't doctors, so we don't know. But there is this whole conversation about, you know, is that a good thing? Should there be some degree of disease that floats around anyway to keep people healthy and all that sort of stuff? That part I don't know, but it probably will be a greater part of the culture. There'll be more discussion about, you know, should we keep doing this kind of thing, or what layer should we leave in that we brought in? So you're absolutely right. I can remember I worked at the 1984 Olympics, and you think about that moment in time. It was the first time en masse that, and I couldn't even say the word at the time, magnetometers were brought in and metal detectors. And it was a whole big, and it was because the threat of whatever kind of Soviet, I don't think it was called terrorism, whatever the Soviets might do at the Olympic Games. And then from that day forward, metal detectors have been a regular part of sporting events.
It is interesting. In the United States, we definitely have a more social society. You know, we like to go to arenas and events and festivals, and that is a, we tend to spend more to go to these type of events. And yet at the same time, there's been this draw for people to come closer to home, bigger TVs, more, you know, better, you know, abilities to watch and do more things from the privacy of your own home. I wonder, we've always talked about the sports industry in general being very strong in a recession because people still want to be entertained. And yet, in something like this, I wonder if it might have a different spin on things and it will incentivize more people to stay home. But again, to the point you made earlier, I mean, the media rights deals are still where the teams make a lot of their money. I wonder how this will play out in the future, if more people will stay home or if they'll come flocking back to the arenas.
Yeah, and this amps up that problem that, you know, facilities and sports enterprises were having anyway. You know, I got this widescreen at home, and I got my own, you know, special flavored popcorn, and, you know, I got my own restroom right here. Why do I need to go and deal with all these people? So, and the idea of dealing with people in this negative moment will certainly encourage another faction of people to say, you know, I'm not going anymore. I've got my setup in place to watch these events, and I'm not going to deal with this. So yeah, you're absolutely right. But it's, you know, fortunately for the business of sports, that thinking has been addressed in part of the calculus on building these new facilities and what kinds of amenities you have available. What a little perks do you get because you came to the game live? What is it that you get that you can't get sitting in your living room? So that's long been a part of what the business of sports has had to deal with. So it's nothing new, but it will be ramped up even more.
I was reading during the last recession that The Economist stated that sports in particular are by and large standing up to the recession better than most industries. I found that fascinating because, again, like you, I was looking for historical, you know, points of reference that you could kind of project how this might affect things. What do you think about the global sports industry? Do you believe that it is better positioned than other industries for recovery once this is contained?
Yeah, you know, I haven't looked closely at that stuff for maybe 5-10 years. There are a bunch of articles written in probably this area looking at it, you know, are sports recession proof? And for the most part, the arguments are that they are, that there is a great desire to preserve that part in spending. And economists look at it, people have these leisure dollars that they keep carved out because people, even if they don't admit it, recognize that's an important part of their life. But it is a segment that if things are too bad can go, that, you know, the going to a game will be cut out before you cut out food. So it's not that severe. So the idea that it's recession proof, it's also something that's the society sort of encourages participation in and attendance at. President Roosevelt during, you know, World War II, let's keep the baseball games going to keep, you know, the public energized and excited about something, give them something to do. So there is always that tone. There's always this, you know, in this moment of deciding not to hold the games, you know, I was kind of looking around to see what kind of commentary, what comparisons would there be with the World War II moment, with the Kennedy assassination moment, with the 9/11 moment. You know, is this one of those decisions? But in many ways, I think this one was, in the end, again, with the NBA's leadership, a lot easier and more sensible decision to just let's not play for a while. It's not that important. So the idea that once it's available again, and no matter where the economy is, it's pretty certain people will find a way to come back if it's available.
Professor Shropshire, thank you so much for coming on and discussing with us. Things are changing so rapidly at this time. It's always nice to have some reasoned discussions where we can look to the future a little bit, because we will get back to normal at some point. And it's interesting to look back at history and understand how that projects to our future. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Anytime.
Thank you to Professor Kenneth Shropshire for coming on the show today, CEO of the Global Sports Institute at Arizona State University. There you have it, people. There's not a lot of hard and fast, we know this is going to happen type responses we can give right now, but we can project out on things like layoffs and how this will impact employment and whether the fans will come back to games or whether processes will change. So it's a very interesting conversation to be having right now. I will try in the coming months to have more guests like Dr. Shropshire come on who can explain a little bit more of how this will project out into your futures and how you all be affected by it. Thank you for tuning into this special edition of the Work in Sports podcast. Please remember to subscribe, share, and save. It's important to us to grow this thing and to continue influencing and informing all of you in the audience who are interested sports business professionals. Thank you again for tuning in, and everybody wash your hands and stay safe. All right, get back to work from home.